Hey, everybody, welcome to the Kay Thompson Live Show. It's that time again on a Wednesday evening at the 8 o'clock hour in this December the 5th. And my name is the person called Citizen Payne, and you have reached the Kay Thompson Live Show. And here she is, the one and only Kay Thompson. Here you go.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kay Thompson Live. And do we have a show for tonight? Something that a lot of people are concerned of, and, well, they should be. It concerns our incarceration rates of, you know, people in the United States, especially in this area, the northern part of the country. Is this the northern part of the country? But anyway, tons of people of color are incarcerated. And we want to deal with the of that problem tonight a little bit, and we'll be talking about it on, you know, several occasions because of the fact that I think it's a very important topic. Fathers have been removed from families and even mothers and so forth, and the jails are being full and filling, and the numbers are, you know, still growing, and there must be something that can be done about it. And we're going to be opening up the calls, you know, the phones for you to call in a little later on. So, you know, we can get this started. Let me see here. We have, Eric, the thing I'm concerned about is the right to vote. And especially in this time right now with the crazy man in the White House, you know, we need all the people to vote that we can possibly get. And in some places, they are actually allowing people who are incarcerated to vote. And there's certain things that they have to have in place to do this, though. It seems that the men can spend up to 6 hours with their children and partners inside a special designed visiting room. And they have to, you know, adhere to certain things, certain rules and regulations. And it's a whole lot, but it's very important. And when you think of the numbers, the vast numbers of, you know, incarceration rates, mainly, everyone, of Black Americans, and others, but Blacks in jails across this country. You have any feelings on that, Eric?
Okay, let's put a pin in it right here real quick and welcome other two co-hosts. First, we're going to welcome Brother Byron Saunders. Byron, how you doing this evening?
It's another blessed day in paradise. A little cold out there, but you know what? What a day filled with so much visual and optics of our country and what it means to be honored. So I'll stop right there because I understand tonight's conversation is about the right to vote and those who have come.
Right,
we'll get to the
events of the day after that discussion. Let me go also and welcome in Wayne Gilman. Hey, Wayne, how you doing this evening?
Just
glad
fine,
to back.
Thanks, and thank you. It's been a while, and I'm sorry about my absences, but you know, life got in the way, but we're back in the saddle again, and I concur with Byron. You know, it's a beautiful day, and certainly a lot, you know, as you said, that we will reflect on what's happened, you know, as soon as possible, you know, and all that.
Any comments you guys might have on this particular subject that my mom wants to cover right now, which will be the possibility, you know, the notion of, here, you talk to them.
Yeah. The notion that, you know, we have a lot of people locked up in jail. And let's go into that for a minute. The incarceration rates are astronomical. So, I understand that there are different programs that are developing or have been developed and continuing. But there's something else that should be done. What are your opinions? Do you have any opinions on the growing incarceration rates in our prisons?
Well,
I know it's not a very attractive subject, but it has to be dealt with at some point.
Well,
yes?
Yes, but as an attractive subject matter, it relates to the one man, one vote concept in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have paid your dues accordingly, and you come out of the system, then you should be afforded the right to retain your civic parts of your being of a member of this democratic country. Now, Florida just passed a bill that allows at least one point two million former convicts who are either misdemeanors or serve their time to come back into the system to be able to vote again. Now, when you think about the numbers that that represents, that changes the dynamics of voting in the entire state of Florida, in which a governor who just ran, Mr. Gilliam, Andrew Gilliam, could have used those votes and would have changed the total dynamics of who would be governor in the state of Florida today. So, and of course, with the disproportionate amount of African-American males in the prison system, as well as females as well, changes the concept of the voting populace in this country at a time when we're not voting more than, 47% of the voting populace is participating? That's not democracy. That's a minority running a country, and we're supposed to be a democratic society where one man, one woman vote is the majority rule of this country. When was the last time we had a majority rule our country?
I just happen to agree with Byron. You know, I mean, it's been a long time since we've seen that, short of what goes on and what used to go on in the Republic of South Africa. But the bottom line is that I was going to illustrate that whole issue with Florida as being setting up the blueprint for something like that to happen. And it would have made it probably a heck of a difference in the gubernatorial contest. But I think what's more important, you know, especially when you look at Florida and what happened recently, what's coming out in the press now about that recent gubernatorial contest in North Carolina, in which our, you know, beloved Sister Abrams lost, you know, and all the dysfunctional behavior on the part of people who have been appointed to oversee the governance of the system to be done properly. Yes, it would have made a difference. But I also think that we have a population in a lot of our institutions in which we are locked up, and I think there's a necessity for education. I think there are a lot who are not being informed properly. You know, the deal is, I'm not saying that this applies to all, but it's important that, you know, that there be some sort of interaction, some, you know, to be aware of what's going on the outside, to understand the political climate in which we're living in. And I just think that, you know, it's not just a question of knowing to vote or having the right to vote, but making the right choices when you vote. You know, and I think that's just how I see it. But the point is
to keep trying to stay out of jail completely. And also, when you're at that point, and you consider like you're going to jail, you know, the person who's doing whatever it takes to get himself or herself in jail has to have some sort of information at hand. But anyway, let's look at the incarceration rates as compared to numbers of people who could vote in elections, you know, to change various things that we need changed.
I understand that. My point is just that, and again, I'm not. I think we're all on the same page. It's just that I really feel, because lately, and I get this is no secret. I've been saying this off and on over the years. You know, I have a little real estate practice, and I deal with the public almost on a regular basis. In fact, I have more exposure now on the climate of and the temperament of some people, and it just amazes me how many people are not as informed. And I that's right. There, you know, I think not sometimes, but very often, if you're caught up in the system where you're forced to be locked up, it's because of some aberration, some dysfunctional behavior that you you know, performed and got and were caught up in. But
exactly.
At the same time, while you're paying your price to get your freedom back, I would like to see that a lot of these people are exposed to the political process, understand the importance of voting, and not just to cast a ballot because somebody said to vote for this one and for that one. Understand what is going on, what the process is all about, you know.
Yeah.
And I just think that's just important. On a personal note, I'm just been going through something with regard to this very subject, and I've caught a lot of heat from someone outside of my community who feels that the current occupant of the White House has the right plan. And, you know, every time I come back with my talking points as a proud Democrat, you know, it's refuted about, and yes, we don't blow our horns long and hard enough, but it just amazes me, how incomprehensible some people could be, even though if you paint it out for them black and white, you know, they just see things a certain way. And no matter how much information is uncovered about, you know, the malfeasance that occurs during the course of an election, you know, they still see it another way. And I just want to make sure that when we have our people out there, you know, voting in the interest of what should be a civil society, you know, and again, this is a segue, could be a segue into what we've gone through the last 3 or 4 days in terms of the death of H.W. Bush. But the fact of the matter is, it pains me to see the level of ignorance out there, even on a professional, even people who are educated, but just want to continue to promote a sophomoric agenda that gets us nowhere. Because they're afraid of change. That's what bothers me.
I bring you up, me too. However, what I'm talking about now is children of incarcerated people, okay? And somebody had, you know, sent me a note saying, can you deal with this? And when we were on the air and we were talking to different people who were incarcerated, because, you know, I did say it's at the members of the Black Police Association under, I think it was Ali Al-Rahman, was that it? Was
right.
The video? And then and the problems that they were having, you know, and I'm not, you know, saying that people should get out of going to jail when they commit a crime, but there's so many aspects to it. You have a family, you have children. What are the children going to do? Are they going to grow up? How will they function? And how can they be contributing people to, you know, our community in a positive way?
That's it. It has to, you know, and the system is broken, Kay and Bart.
Yeah,
I mean, we all know this
to
a certain extent.
Yeah, and it's something that has to be discussed at some point, you know. And that's just one of the things that I'm concerned about. Now, if we're going to go back to, you know, the political stuff with, you know, the person in the White House. I can't even call him a person, really. But, you know, if I said the words, I would be probably arrested on the air. But anyway, so what do you feel? What's your present status? It makes me angry every time I think of it, so.
Well, one thing for sure, Kay, is that with respect to the children of those who people are in prison, I can share an anecdotal story that actually happened to me here in New York City. When I was running the Queens Historical Society for 8 years, I would get invited to come to a school, elementary, middle, or high school, and talk about what I do as an administrator, preserving the history of a borough. And I remember going into a school in Brooklyn in which a teacher, it was an elementary school, third grade, and the teacher told me the minute I walked in the door, do not be surprised if these kids do not pay attention to you. And I was like, don't worry, I got this. So my first effort was to tell them my name, share what I do in preserving the history of Queens, New York City. Then the next thing I said to them, how many people have ever heard of Rikers Island? Every hand in that classroom went up. Now, this is a third grade in Brooklyn. There are 18,000 people in Rikers Island right now today who are detention. They're not in the penitentiary system. They're in the detention center. 18,000 people in a classroom of 20-some people. Every child's hand raised up when I said, how many people have ever heard of Rikers Island? And then
that's
I asked the question, that's a crime, because then I said to them, let me just tell you something. The statistics of this day, this very day, said that 1 in 3 young African-American men will be first-time offenders before they reach the age of 25. And I just started counting heads in that room. I said, 1, 2, 3, you're going to jail. 1, 2, 3, you're going to jail. 1, 2, 3, you're going to jail. And you can see the look on their faces saying, oh, no, 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 I'm not going to go to jail. But they knew somebody in Rikers Island. Everyone in
their
classroom knew somebody in their family that was in Rikers Island. And I said to them, I said, well, here's the deal. Here's the deal, young people. If you don't want to be a person in Rikers Island, in which my job is as a historian, is to tell the story of African-American people in the borough of Queens, New York City, and your name is not going to be on that list as one of those detainees in Rikers Island, then this very day, you need to make up your mind that you're going to be something in your life. One of the things you got to recognize is that the young people who are in the first grade and the second grade are looking to you as their leader. And if you do something bad, they're going to emulate you, copy you. So you've got a responsibility to reach down and make sure that your younger friends and your brothers and sisters and cousins who are younger than you don't end up following you in a bad choice, ending up in Rikers Island. That's the dynamics of what we're dealing with.
Exactly. And, you know, it starts in the home, but when you get into the public schools, you know, and the kids are young ages, you know, they are open to anything. I remember having taught, I was a, teacher in elementary school and junior high and high school and college. And then I remember the other teachers coming to me in my space and asking me how I got my kids so quiet, because they were coming in, you know, making a lot of noise. And it was because of one thing. I developed a certain program, and that program, the state of New Jersey had me going around to the various cities in the state to teach the program. I called it the Electronic Media Development for Learning Program. I had just had a background of radio and television and radio in New Jersey. And also, the only thing I did was I would go into the classroom and say, who wants to be on television? And every kid would raise their hands. I said, okay, sit down and shut up. Not in those words, but sit down and be quiet. And a pin drop. And one day, this younger teacher who was just a first-year teaching system, teacher, in the Newark Public School System, and this was in the South Ward of Newark, and he we came to school, and he's outside, standing outside of his classroom, crying. And I said, what the heck is wrong with you? And so he said, I can't get the kids quiet. I said, what? So I walked in that classroom, and all of a sudden I just said, who wants to be on television? And every kid raised their hand. I said, then sit down and shut up. And I had them. I had them because at that time, the electronic media, meaning radio or television, was not available to them. They didn't know anything about television or radio in the school system. And so then again, after teaching a few more years and being a highly respected teacher and having the highest reading scores of any other teacher, I wouldn't say in the state, but they were pretty high, I decided to go into, you know, radio and television. And aren't you glad?
Yes, the world would have missed a whole bunch had you not made
decision. Wayne, you would not have met me, that's for sure.
Probably not. My circle was not really as far as the Garden State at that particular time.
I know.
And
I
think
know,
it's my loss. I mean, I've become more culturally aware of what life and the the inner workings of what goes on in our community as a result of being exposed to the many people that you know, Kay, and your family. And I say that, I know it sounds comical, but I mean that with the sincerest, every sincere fiber within my body. You know, I think that, you know, it's important to travel and to interact and get exposed beyond what you're accustomed to. And I grew up in Brooklyn. I occasionally have to go back to the things that I used to learn and do a die bed style to deal with my side business. But I have to say, having had that exposure in media, and I don't think it's dead now, but I'm just saying all those 30-some-odd plus years that I put into it and just opened to a completely – it was a classroom every day when you showed up to go on the air to do a talk show or read news or even play music for that matter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different now to a certain extent, but mm-hmm. the dynamics are still the same. And I just think from that perspective, you know, maybe I'm trailing off into a completely different arena, but the bottom line is I just think media and exposure is very important. One needs to go out and see the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that people thought about the people in jail, the people who are incarcerated, who cannot get out. A lot of them are there because they should be there. But the family structure completely breaks down. The interaction with the kids and their families, that completely is at risk. But anyway, that's another topic.
Okay, let's get out of that.
I want to get to. Wait a minute. I don't want to really, you know, belabor this, but I just had that on my mind. Now to my favorite topic: dump Trump. Need I say more?
Well, he's feeling it. You know.
Yeah. Hi.
He's certainly feeling it. I would say this week.
Yeah, if you looked at this is Eric again. If you looked at the body posture when he walked in, sat next to other presidents, you know, you can tell it kind of set it off. We were watching today, everybody was trying to figure out, you know, some people, if you're watching CNN as we were,
uh-huh.
we heard the Jake Tapper and these people really trying to read their body language. They didn't want to say the obvious, but the obvious was that Trump, you know, sitting there with his hands between his legs, all sheepish. Once he actually got around Barack Obama and Michelle and the rest of the people, you know, which is indicative of a person who is not really all that they bluster to be,
uh-huh.
right? I mean, you know, all this bad talk he's talking, but then when he's in the room with the people, you know, he doesn't have too much to say, right?
Yeah.
And you got to give kudos to HW, right, to show this guy, you know, the decorum, you were talking about it earlier
mm-hmm.
in terms of various things, Wayne. The decorum, you know, the reason why we're a civilized society and the peaceful transference of power. That's what that means. And this guy who doesn't understand that, otherwise people be fighting in the street. We still be doing civil wars every 30 years, 10 years, right? So, I mean, you got to give kudos to George H.W. Bush for including him and trying to show this guy, you know, this is the respect we have. There are some things more important than yourself. You know,
exactly. I agree. And again, not to dominate, I think that was the one thing I pulled from this whole experience about this man's passing. I was not an avid fan of the Bushes, including
mm-hmm.
W. But I have to say one thing. When it comes to their demeanor in terms of at least having an open mind, to know that they're not in the world by themselves and they're not
mm-hmm.
trying to forward the agenda of one particular group of people in this country, that they embraced everyone. They knew what it was like to have the right to agree to disagree and still maintain friendships. And you
right.
have to give kudos to HW, because basically he was the architect of that. And he lived his life by that, and it's commendable. You know, I mean, There were things that I had forgotten about that he had done. But I know in the thick of what was going on back then and not trying to understand as much because he was from a generation where, you know, the Republican Party was undergoing change. You know, it was no longer a party that was necessarily embraced by people of color. And I think because of that, and his predecessors, you know, that basically turned a knife, Nixon and Reagan and others, who, you know, had their own way of trying to handle the masses and forward their blatant agenda of racism, or subtle, at least they thought it was subtle. It's not subtle to many of us. But, you know, the things that this man stood for and the opportunities that he gave black people, like a Condi Rice and Colin Powell and others, you know, you have to say that's commendable. And even George W. Bush and the creation of the African American Museum, the Smithsonian Museum that everyone is going to today, he was one of the original architects of that once the plan was brought forward.
Well,
he
was supportive as president. He was supportive of making funding available. On several occasions, W. worked with my uncles in terms of securing funding for various programs and fighting malaria and disease in Africa. And AIDS in Africa. So the whole notion, to me, you got to remember, apart from America being the whole kind of white supremacist society and white people, and they were a part of that society and benefited as a whole from a you know, ideological standpoint, and white people in America and all that, being a part of the Republican Party, the ideology it had systematically hurt black people en masse, right? But the fact that they were, there's something that they say about kind of Northeast Republicans, you know, Massachusetts, New England Republicans, where it seems there's a little bit more liberalism, you know, particularly in terms of blue blood individuals like, blue blood individuals like the Bush family and the Kennedys. You know, there's a certain similarity in terms of being at that elevated point in society where you're not, you know, you have a little bit more education, you have a little bit more class. You're not necessarily basing everything on race as much as class and ideology, I believe. And the fact that they were able to get over and go with things that were race-based was that they were part of that society, and really, you know, they're going along with it. But from an individual standpoint, it was what the point that I'm trying to make. Individuals like the Bushes, if they meet you on an individual footing, regardless of race, they'll take you for who you are as a person. And that's the sense I got from what people were saying. And even George W. said in the eulogy of his father always thought it was more about character than pedigree, you know?
Yeah.
So from that perspective, Republicans like those, like the Jack Kemps, they're more liberal people. I mean, you know, they're Republicans and they're moderates, but at least part of their belief system does not include racism, or at least active racism, you know, as does the, like you were saying, the Nixons and the Reagans, and now you got the Trump. I mean, Trump to the extreme of that, right?
Oh.
So.
I mean, pales in comparison.
I mean, he's to the extreme in terms of their notion of being opposite type of Republicans and just being it, you know, the White Citizens Council almost. I mean, and that, like you said, during the funeral today, you know, that was really exemplified about hearing these little, you know, it's the small things that you notice about public servants and people who are in positions of power and money, what they do in the in-between moments, right? How they greet somebody, whether they shake everybody's hand.
Yeah, that even something as minor as that, his gesticulations, his facial expressions, the fact that he wouldn't even turn to look at the Clintons or even extend his hand.
I'm not really talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about George Bush. I'm talking about makes an individual where people see that they really have a genuine concern for people. And
right.
when a politician or someone, a person of that position, it could have been about Trump. You're taking it the opposite way. But what I'm saying is that's how you can tell the measure of a person, what they do in the in-between times. Like Dr. King said, what do you do in times of crisis as opposed to times of comfort, right? And if you look at footage of George Bush, I was struck with certain in-between moments, like when he went to see the troops. They were showing that, running that footage when him and Barbara are out in the desert, and he's walking amongst the guy. And just the enthusiasm that he's walking and greeting the soldiers with, and the way he was eating like he was eating something off of the hood of a truck. You know, this guy's president of the United States. There was not the formality, you know, and the fact that here's a blue blood guy but had the common touch. He could relate to people, comment on a one-to-one thing. And that's what they were saying about the misinterpretation of his personality, was that when people met him on a one-on-one basis, you can feel that there was a genuine concern for you as an individual, you know, and that's what makes a public servant, which was exemplified by his life, so...
I agree. I mean, and again, when you juxtapose that with someone who's throwing toilet paper with people who are going through grief because of a natural disaster, I mean, it just speaks volumes. I mean, he's so far out of his class. His wife had more class than he did today.
Right. And, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, a reunion of the president's there and or a family reunion. Everybody's all classy and you got that one hood relative. That comes in there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the rich guys, they're all, I mean, even in the wealth class in New York City, you know, he was the tacky rich guy, right? I mean, I think that's how the other wealthy or millionaires look at Trump, you know. He's the ghetto rich guy, you know. So
he certainly got us. He ghettoed and got us, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
And there's
that's
a price to pay for that, you know. I'm
sure. I mean, there's some,
soon to come.
There's some things, yeah, right, soon
yeah,
to come,
soon
right,
to
Mom?
Come.
Because
oh,
some,
yeah.
These new developments.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm interested to hear what you guys think about some of this new stuff here with Mueller and things like that. I don't know, Byron, if you heard about the counts or the lesser counts they're saying because Mueller, Flynn, was acting so... the amount of information was so substantial that he was helping with the cases, you know, and I think they're recommending almost no jail time for Flynn.
For Flynn?
For Michael Flynn.
Yeah.
Is Byron still on the line? I guess we lost Byron, huh? Maybe Lisa can check to see if we can reconnect him. But I'm sure your ears were piqued to that today, Wayne, with Michael Flynn being offered that lesser sentence or the sentencing guidelines. Wayne, we have Wayne.
We're losing. What is this?
Seemed like we're losing everybody. But anyway,
hello.
What was happening was okay. Yeah.
We lost you for a minute.
Lost you for a minute. Just wanted to find out your opinion about the Mueller judgment there with the Michael Flynn as regards to Michael Flynn. I was talking about that a little bit as we moved on from the funeral. And, are you familiar with the sentencing thing that was released last night, the sentencing guidelines for Michael Flynn that Mueller has released, the prosecutor's office?
Wow.
I think Wayne might be...
Well, this is Byron.
I don't know what happened just now, but I heard the insert from the network. But just quickly, because I know I've been going on and on, I wanted to hear Byron's thoughts on the Flynn piece, too. Yeah, well, why don't you
leave off,
Byron?
That's what I was saying. Well, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, here's the key phrases to look at. With all the redactions that are blocked out, what is truly unique is that we have a general in Flynn who literally put his country above everything else. Because remember, months ago, I indicated
Everything else?
Well, he did. He tried to at first, but his pension. Remember this. They squeezed him out of everything. They could have sentenced him months ago, but he met with Mueller and his team for 19 different times. And out of those 19 times, you remember this, Flynn had to sell his house. His son was about to be indicted as a co-conspirator. And while that was happening, Flynn realized he was not owing his allegiance to Trump. His allegiance was to the country. And I'm telling you now, if Trump thinks that he's clear of collusion, of treason, of obstruction of justice, the military code in this country is this, and never forget this. If their code is, there's one thing about the Joint Chiefs of Staff that each one of them knows, if given the opportunity, they will empower themselves to engage in a coup d'etat and take the President of the United States out in a body bag. They do not owe their allegiance to him. That's a military
I just want to back you up a little bit. I'll say this about
Flynn. Flynn is the linchpin. Forget Cohen. Forget Manafort. Flynn's got given enough information both on collusion, obstruction of justice, and treason that goes well past Trump and his administration. Because don't forget, the GOP National Republican
Committee. Yeah, but I don't think Flynn is putting it. I don't think – all I'm saying is I agree with all of that. I don't think Flynn is doing it because he's putting his country ahead of everything because he decides to suddenly be allegiant to his country.
But well, what about Mueller?
Hold on. It sounds like he's doing it to save his ass. It doesn't sound like he's doing all this now coming to a Jesus moment because all of a sudden he's getting patriotic. He's doing it to save his ass. Like you said, they stripped him of everything. His son is threatening to lock his son up, all of that. And plus, he was working for Turkey when he was a foreign agent. So I don't think he was doing anything for the country. I think once the heat got hot, you know, that's when he decided to flip. He's not trying to have he's not loyal to Trump that. He's, you know.
That's
what I was saying. When you said that, I really didn't understand what you meant.
What about Mueller? When is he coming out with what he has?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Byron.
Mueller has enough evidence to engage not just the Trump administration and the people who work around him. He's got material on Mitch McConnell. He's got material on Rance Priebus. Remember, Rance was the head of the NEC, of the Republican National Committee, before he was brought into the administration. And each one of them got money from the Russian oligarch. They changed the Republican Party in Cleveland at their convention, changed their platform to take some of the heat off of the Russian parts of the Russian pieces that the Obama administration had thrown several of their diplomats out, closed down several of their pieces, and the Russians, Russia was trying to get back into the graces of the support from this country. Remember, this is spy versus spy. This has far gone beyond Trump. Trump happens to be the puppet of
Yeah, as far as Putin is concerned, he is his puppet. I mean, Putin's been playing that long-term Soviet game on Trump, and Trump has no idea. I'm talking about Trump is committing now in terms of witness tampering.
But what you really have to understand is that you have to connect the dots of history. Today's funeral was more than just about George H.W. Bush. Remember, George H.W. Bush was head of the CIA, and he orchestrated the destruction of Russia.
Right.
That's what you've got to go back in time and recognize who dismantled the United Soviet Socialist Republic. Who dismantled that? It wasn't Reagan. It was the former head of the CIA, and then the Bush clan. Bush was, now with all due respect, let me tell you, today's funeral was one of the most emotional moments I've seen. And I lived in Washington, D.C. I was there at the rotunda when JFK was laying in state. My parents took me down there, and I remember seeing little John walk past us on Constitution Avenue on that very momentous day. I was there for the Million Man March. I was there for the March on Washington. I was there when Bobby Kennedy got killed. So it's a point of which most people don't understand. When you live in Washington, D.C., and you've got to be witness to all that went on today, that leaves an indelible mark on your spirit as a citizen. And at this point, I shed a few tears today because it was about the honor of our country. But we never forget who orchestrated Willie Horton, who orchestrated crack in our community, who orchestrated the Nicaraguan guns for trade for dope.
Sandinista,
which
opened up Freeway Rick and all that coke going to crack cocaine going to L.A. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And then when you look at how the GOP evolved from that moment to today, you got a chance to see how a Trump could get elected because a Bush administration, and never forget this, he started the Iraq War on Martin Luther King's birthday.
Exactly.
I didn't know that. I forgot that fact.
That's why history is important. And you've got to connect the dots. And I mean, I was moving. I was moved today because this is one of those times when you see our country and what honor is supposed to be about. But he sat there today like had attention deficit disorder.
Yeah, he was out of his league. He had no clue about the brevity of the moment. And also too, but you also realize if you know like we know, and you're a little bit more educated and know that behind the scenes stuff, how the history of this country has been manipulated by the powerful and rich, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, back in the day, that's what they're talking about. His image, George Bush's image, is a whole different vibe now once he got out and the whole grandfatherly shit and stuff. Because before, it was like he was a gangster. You know, he was the gangster, you know, undercover, you know, head of the CIA, ex-president, you know, and all that stuff he used to do, jumping out of planes on his birthday, you know, the shout-out to his boys in the CIA. You know, when you look at some of those things and see those guys catching him when he comes down that last jumpy, those are all, you know, those are all military and Secret Service guys and the allegiance they all had to him and the way he treated them. So, you know, he was, you know, this whole kind of remaking of H.W. Bush since he's been out and been like the grandfather type, and then his son came and took the heat off of him for being like one of the lesser, you know, even though all the stuff that he was involved in had happened under his tenure. You know,
and never forget this.
He wasn't
supposed
to get that nod. You know, I mean, I don't mean to intervene, but you know,
go ahead,
and I tell you, Byron was elegant.
He
was elegantly eloquent with his reflection on what happened back then. I just hope that two of my tax Republican friends, the tax advisors that I know, are listening because you couldn't put it any better just laying it out. You know, because these are the talking points that I sometimes tend to forget. Maybe it's old age or senility setting in, but it bothers me when there's so much praise given to someone. And I'm not saying that he's not worthy post his presidency, but I remember Willie Horton. I remember the things that he did in the CIA. And yes, he did it in the name of the United States and preserving the system that we have here. But
Wayne, never forget,
were victimized in that process.
Never forget this. He also gave us Osama bin Laden. He was the Osama bin Laden was a CIA operative brought in at the same time that George Herbert Walker Bush was head of CIA.
Right, because you also too, I mean, ironically, really quickly, let me just drop this point in too while we're making all these references. You got also let's remember how when he ran against John McCain, or when W ran against John McCain, how they did John McCain, right? I mean, we're talking about the whole honor and the whole family legacy that these public servants have and their families have, but even how they did John McCain when they tried to say that his adopters, you know, promote that whole line of his adopted daughter being the product of an affair with a black prostitute, you know? I mean, And John McCain, you know, as we think about John McCain, towards the end we got nostalgic about him, but he was in that class with those guys. He carried that same type of water. But even amongst them, you see how they did him, you know, when it came down to it. So, you know, how, you know, Bush, I mean, it's just ironic we're talking about the image that was promoted, you know.
Exactly. I blame the media for that to a certain extent, too. It's bad enough that we have the problems with the Fox network, but you know, there is still the free press, and I still think that, you know, their feet should be held to the fire with regard to investigating half the stuff that they sweep under the rug. And I also think to a certain extent they are benefiting from this circus that is going on in the White House. You know, the fact that he controls the news cycle. And
good TV.
Even though
keeps everybody turning on the news every night to see what's Trump doing today.
Exactly. You know, they benefit from this.
Of course. That's why, you know, I mean, I was watching a documentary the other night about this guy, I.F. Stone, who was, an independent news gatherer back in his day. And I'd never heard of him, but he was talking about, you know, I mean, one of the notions was how the media can be complicit in big government, too. And if you don't have the media to check that, to keep it honest, then, you know, you get swallowed up, basically. I'm paraphrasing a lot. But, you know, I mean, before current modern television, within the last 20, 30 years, certainly before the Internet age, media was, to a certain point, complicit, right? I mean, during the Nixon years and even before that, the media, to a certain degree, I mean, not the things Nixon was doing was detrimental against the country, but in terms of carrying the water, in terms of the talking points for war and Vietnam back in the days, the media was definitely complicit, right?
White media.
You know, well, I mean, that was the only media that was, for the most part, that was around. Where I'm talking about like the 70s and the 60s and, you know, when we had the Nixons and the Johnsons and, you know, you had the three channels, CBS, NBC, and ABC. And, you know, the media was kind of complicit in what was going to be the country talking points. Certainly in times of when they needed to bang the drum for us to go to war, you know.
Yeah.
It's only when investigative journalists at each time of those, you know, because I guess obviously with Watergate, certainly with Vietnam, you know, you had the press finding out certain stories and you had a few individuals who would follow up and start to, you know, pull the string and unravel the string. But
it was really the alternative press that fueled a lot of the changes that took place, because, as you said, everybody was marching to the same tune to a certain extent until there was an uproar. I mean, till people were demonstrating in the streets and people were and thousands of Americans, black, white, whomever, were coming back in body bags because of something that they didn't even want to participate in, you know.
Right.
I hate to repeat myself. If I said this story before, I remember going out with a good friend of mine. We just got out of high school, and we were going down to Coney Island to play one Sunday afternoon. And I'll never forget, the next day, Jim Corwin went. He was in the rice paddies in Vietnam in less than 24 hours. You know, and I was all but 19, 20 years of age. He never made it back. You know,
Did he even go to boot camp?
His draft numbers were high enough that he was called before before I was called. You know, and that's when we had a draft, and it didn't matter what color you were, you had to serve.
Right,
and
but I'm wondering if you had to go to boot camp first, or they just snatch you up.
Yeah,
you know,
he had done all that. He had done all that.
Oh, he had done all that. Okay,
back. They sent him back home to be with his family before being stationed in Vietnam. And all of us were on a cyclone one afternoon, hanging out in Brooklyn and Coney Island, having a ball. And the next day, he came back and told us, our friends at the time, that he was in a rice paddy in fewer than 24 hours after playing in Brooklyn that afternoon. And about a year and 6 months after that, he was gone. You know?
Wow.
And that was like an indelible, this is 30 years ago, it's still rest in the core of my belly today about the viciousness of what goes on in this country when it comes to war. And I'm speaking as a proud American with a sister in the United States Navy as an ensign.
Well, you know, that brings us back to like an individual, like they're saying, Bush today was the last president to have served. And he, for that, he had a different perspective, even though he jumped into those wars, you know, with Saddam and all those. And obviously those were about other things than the average American knows about, even back then with them. But at least he understood, and you know, him and Colin Powell and Dick Cheney and all those guys got together to go in there and make it quick, in and out. So I guess, you know, they had a plan to go in there and get what they wanted and leave again. And then I guess they wanted to get some more oil because for whatever reason, George W., that even when he took the presidency, one of his main things was, you know, if he could get Saddam Hussein, he was going to finish the job his dad wanted to do, right?
Yeah, but I think that was pitiful because that was a moment. I mean, I'm past all the issues with W, but the fact of the matter is he wanted to parrot his father so badly. You know, the fact that he started the war based on the fact that he thought his father was offended by Saddam Hussein. And the fact that the family were friendly with Osama bin Laden. Because, as you cited earlier, about the ties to the CIA and what he was doing, you know.
Right.
So, and he is a recovering alcoholic, you know.
Who?
And it's
who,
you know,
who?
It saddens me, but George W.
Okay, I didn't know you're. I've never heard that. I've never heard that. So
well,
that's why I wanted to know.
Maybe
you guys
make
a statement
to it. But you know, I know he's had issues, and the fact that he was able to escape going and serving in the armed forces. You know,
yeah,
they gave him
never
a pass
that.
That he was doing. You know, I mean, it's just, and I'm so glad that Byron pointed some of this stuff out earlier, you know, so, you know, eloquently, because, you know, we could get wrapped up in nostalgic about what goes on. And I admit the climate today is far more civil because of this man's passing, because you could see a clear distinction between class and the classless, no matter how much money you got, you know. But it's just really, really unfortunate that a lot of us still had to go through what we went through, and it is what it is. You can't change history for that.
No, and you know, it's like you said, you said you got caught up in the nostalgia today and how they. Present things, right, to make you feel nostalgic about this guy's thing. And also, to Byron's point, you can't, and obviously, certainly, growing up in D.C., obviously, Byron, you get it a lot more than anybody else, but it's ironic you said that. You can't go, if anybody that takes a trip to Washington, D.C., and walk amongst these monuments that we've built to this country, right, and be in these halls and these hallowed halls and all of the history that's so heavy in the area, you can't help but get inspired and buy into the whole PR campaign about America, right? Being the great country and the laws were debated in this great hallowed hall and, you know, all the nobility that is inferred with the telling of the story. And, you know, obviously the dark side of what made America great and the slavery and all of that. But you can't go down to the Washington, D.C. and not get inspired in that direction of service and want to do something for your country, because that's how the town is designed and the history of it and everybody working in government and, you know, a lot of people doing it the right way and really trying to help out and are regular Americans. You can get impressed by that. Right, you can get caught up in that whole notion, and sometimes obviously it's a good thing. You want to serve your country, you want to do that, and so it's kind of intoxicating like that. And I'm saying in that, you can have history distorted, right? Individuals can look like, you know, right, Byron? I mean, you know, that's why, you know,
the
passing of H.W. He looks like a lot more of a noble character than a lot of people thought when he was president.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
However, it is good for the nation to have these moments of reflection, especially
right.
in a time when we are being challenged with truth. Remember,
right.
we got a person in the office right now who lies, is a serial, pathetic liar. Every single
mm-hmm.
thing gives us lies. And so when
yeah.
you're being confronted with a reality versus virtual reality, this is like a therapist's shock treatment. And perhaps we will look back on this day and realize certain people woke up.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because when your emotions are drained like this, it's a cathartic experience. And
right.
you have to, and I mean, that's the part of which what I say is you realize there's a higher authority in charge of us all, because no one could have scripted this at this very moment.
Yeah.
We just got through McCain. We're getting through George H.W. Bush. We're being thrown with so many disasters, like, for instance, the California fires.
Mm.
Now, as bad as they are, not one story told about Paradise, California, mentioned that was the most racist community in the state of California. They did things
okay.
in that particular community that were basically white supremacists and anti and very racist to a black community. You never heard that story, but it's the truth.
Okay.
But
you mean in terms?
We're coming to the end of the show, guys.
We have three minutes. We have 3 minutes. Let me just kind of go into the. Are you talking about? Because I'm not familiar what you're talking about, Byron. So, and a lot of us aren't
the
familiar. So, what can you elaborate a little bit on that?
2 minutes.
Yes. Paradise. California. You got to Google it, look it up, its history. It was
okay.
one of those cities that restricted black folks from coming in, and it's
yep.
almost like a southern town itself. Now, I'm not, I'm a Christian, and I'm unabashedly, I'm not ashamed to admit it, but when the Bible and the book of Revelation said the fire next time, everybody was
right.
thinking about nuclear
right.
Holocaust.
Right. So, but let's get back to the issue, because you're talking about something that not everybody is familiar with. So let's lay it out. You said Paradise, California was a very restricted community back in, I guess, the what years? This
yeah, Byron.
And Paradise is the place 40, that the fire took place. So in what? You're 40, saying back in the 40s 50, or whatever when they were doing? Okay, when this was 40s, widespread. 50s, okay. All right, 60s, I understand.
And 70s. Well, this is recent
okay.
history.
Wow.
This ain't like
right.
1800 history. This is 20th
okay.
century history. Okay.
Right.
So
wow. we didn't. Nobody knew that story. So we're just trying to understand what
that's,
you're talking about. But
thanks,
well, I'm connecting dots
right.
about history and how important history
yeah.
is, because most people
right.
will not understand about George Herbert Walker Bush and what
right.
his history represents to this country. And yes,
right.
2 minutes.
We gave honor.
2 minutes.
We gave honor to him. Anyway, I'm back on the program with you guys. Peace and love, all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great show, guys.
Thank you,
Byron. Great show.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I just
all
heard
right.
from my
thanks.
Tax man. He's listening.
Join
says Republicans
week, everyone,
create jobs, not entitlements. Oh, boy.
Thank you.
Oh,
join
boy.
Us next
all
week.
Right.
Join us next week for Kay Thompson Live, everyone, for more exciting programs. And filled with information that you have not heard before. I'm Kay Thompson.